Doug's voice crackled in her earphones. He's in a fabric suit. Edith thought of all the rodeos she had seen, with cowboys guiding their tough little ponies in steer roping competitions. Just ease on back, she said silently to the tractor. That's it, honey. Nice and slow and easy.
Hold it, Doug commanded. We're on safe ground, but I think Bam's passed out.
Edith clambered down from the tractor and went to the edge of the gulch. Doug was connecting his emergency air hose from his backpack tank to Gordette's. She shook her head inside her helmet. If it had been me, I'd have let the sumbitch die down there.
He tried to kill Doug.
But she heard Gordette cough and sputter and knew he was going to make it. Doug had saved him. It took the better part of an hour to get them both out of the rill and their air tanks topped off from the tractor's supply. Then Edith started back toward Moonbase, with Doug sitting between her and Gordette. For hours, Gordette said nothing. The man just sat on Doug's other side, wrapped in his space suit and total silence. At last, Doug said to him, I've been pretty close to death, Bam. It changes your outlook on life.
Does it?
Gordette muttered.
It did for me.
I think you're going to find it will for you, too.
Gordette said nothing.
Edith thought Doug was wasting his breath.
When we get back to Moonbase, Doug went on, you'll have the chance to start a new life. Start all over, with the past gone forever.
Until they throw you out of Moonbase, Gordette said.
They're not going to do that, Bam. With your help, we can beat them.
With my help?
I want you with us. I want you to be part of Moonbase.
Do you?
We've gone through a lot together, Bam. We're bound together. Life or death, what affects one of us affects us both.
Gordette was silent for several moments. Then he said grudgingly,
You got some grip, all right. Once you get your hands on a man, you don't let go, do you?
That's up to you, Doug answered.
You're crazy, you know that.
Maybe, Doug admitted.
And what about you, lady? Gordette asked sullenly. You as crazy as this man here?
Edith almost snapped out her true feelings, but she realized that Doug had risked his life to save his would-be murderer, and now it all hung on what she had to say. She swallowed her anger.
If Doug wants you to be with us, that's good enough for me.
You'd trust me?
Edith blurted. Not very far.
Not at first, anyway. For a moment there was silence. Then Gordette laughed, a low, ironic chuckle. Fair enough, I guess. Fair enough.
Edith wished she could see the man's face.
Doug's not crazy, she thought. He's wiser than all of us put together. But I wish I could see Gordette's face. I'd feel better about this if I could see his eyes.
Part 3. Battle. But when the blast of war blows in our ears, then imitate the action of the tiger.
Shakespeare, Henry V.
The Hague. Telephone for you, Senator. The White House.
Jill Myers looked up from her computer screen. Despite the fact that she had not been a member of the U.S. Senate for nearly 6 years now, her private secretary still called her senator.
Who is it?
She asked warily.
The president,
he replied in his usual near whisper. Jill grinned at her oldest assistant.
I guess I can make time for the president.
Almost instantly, the face of an intense young man appeared on her desktop screen.
Justice Myers, one moment, please, for the president.
His image disappeared and the screen showed the seal of the President of the United States on a royal blue background. The American Eagle held a sheaf of arrows in one talon and an olive branch in the other. War or peace? It took more than a moment for the President to come on, of course. The power trip. The President doesn't get on the horn until she's absolutely certain that the party she wants to talk to is already on the line. No flunkies. Jill glanced up at her private secretary and realized with a pang that he'd been a fresh-faced kid just out of law school when he'd first come aboard as a senatorial aide.
We're all getting old, she thought.
catching her own reflection in the phone screen. Her face was round and ordinary as a pie pan, she thought, with mousy brown hair as straight and limp as overcooked spaghetti. And still that scattering of freckles across her snub of a nose, like a tomboy version of Huck Finn.
"Jill," said the president, "you're looking very pensive today."
The president looked elegant as usual, silver-gray hair swept back stylishly, bright blue eyes sparkling. Her latest facelift had tightened the sagging flesh beneath her chin and made her seem 10 years younger.
"What can I do for you, Mrs. President?" Jill asked, genuinely curious about the reason for this call.
It had to be nearly 7 a.m. in Washington, early for her.
"It's this request for extradition."
"Oh, the Killifer business?"
"Yes. I don't understand what you've got to do with it."
"I've been asked to intercede in my official capacity as a justice of the World Court," Jill said.
"Asked? By whom?"
"Joanna Brudnoy."
"I see."
The president's tone went decidedly frosty.
"The Justice Department has apparently refused to extradite the man to Kiribati."
"We have no treaty of extradition with that nation," the president said.
"That's why the World Court has been asked to intercede," said Jill.
"I see."
"Killifer was identified as the man who raped and murdered Tamara Bonai, yet the American government has refused to extradite him to Kiribati to stand trial. The victim was Kiribati's head of state, for God's sake."
"That's a very serious charge," said the president.
"There's an eyewitness."
"Douglas Stavanger, I know. But he's on the moon, and his so-called eyewitnessing was done through a virtual reality link. Any competent defense lawyer will make mincemeat of that."
"I'm not so sure," Jill said. "In any event, I think you'd want the son of a bitch to be brought to justice."
The president did not flinch at Jill's deliberate profanity.
"Jill, this is all tied up with the moon base business."
"Which means it's all tied up with the New Morality people, right?"
"Those are my supporters, Jill."
"And they're protecting a murderer?" The president's face was a smooth, blank facade. She gave away nothing.
"An alleged murderer," she said coolly.
"I may not be a lawyer," Jill countered, "but I do know a few points of law. You're protecting Killifer. Why?"
"Jill, I thought you were one of my supporters, too. I know you don't agree with everything the New Morality does, but you've always been on my side.
Why are you protecting this man?"
"There's much more here than you're aware of, Jill."
"Wait a minute," Jill said. "I've served time at Moon Base. I was there with Paul Stavanger when it was nothing but a bunch of tin cans stuck in the ground."
"You had an affair with Paul Stavanger," the president murmured.
"Name me one woman who served at Moon Base in those days who didn't," Jill rejoined happily. "He was one hell of a guy before he married Joanna."
"Joanna," the president said with obvious distaste.
"If I were still in the Senate instead of stuck here in the World Court, I'd be fighting you on this moon base business. You're making a bad mistake."
With the ghost of a smile, the president said, "That's the thanks I get for nominating you to the International Court of Justice."
"Come off it, Luce.
You backed me on the nanotech treaty when you were in the Senate."
"Because I didn't want nanotechnology turned into a new arms race," Jill said. "I never thought the treaty'd be used against Moonbase. They can't exist without nanomachines, and you know it."
The president sighed. "So I suppose you'll vote in favor of their independence if the question comes up before the World Court."
"It's on our docket for November. I've tried to get an emergency session to hear the matter, but I was voted down."
"It doesn't matter, Jill. By November, the question will have been settled conclusively. In fact, it should be settled in about a week or so."
"You're going to do it, then? Attack Moonbase?"
"The United Nations is doing it, not me."
"But you're not raising a protest? If you hollered, Foray would have to listen."
"I'm not going to interfere with a UN operation," said the president.
Jill fumed in silence for a moment, then grumbled,
"Well, I hope you don't expect to get reelected."
This time the president's smile showed teeth.
"The New Morality will reelect me because I backed the enforcement of the nanotech treaty."
"You think so?"
"All the polls show it conclusively."
"So you're not going to let Killifer be extradited?"
"Under no circumstances."
"Damn!
If I were Doug Stavanger,